I was talking to Gauranga Prabhu, so I... Fortunately, I missed his introduction. I am just a tiny servant of Krishna, and I am very grateful for the opportunity to hear and chant about Lord Krishna with you all. Especially in these weeks leading up to Gaur Purnima, the Divine Appearance Day of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Today I'd like to present to you a different way of looking at the world. I'd like to present to you today a different vision for understanding the world. The way we are taught to view the world through the eyes of mundane education is that basically this world is up to the human beings to make something out of it. The human beings give this world meaning. The human beings plunder the resources of this world. The human beings make war. The human beings make peace. The human beings make economic booms. The human beings make economic busts. Everything in this world depends on the human beings. And then, if we're a little pious, we'll add God in just a little bit. Like some seasoning that you put on the main meal, or some achar you keep on the side. That is the best thing that people can understand for how this world is. Most people act as if this world has no connection to God. The best people will allow a little bit of input from God. But what is it that the Vedic knowledge teaches us? The Vedic texts teach us that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always coming to this world. Once you begin to view this world as a place that is constantly visited by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you will feel more accountable to the Supreme Lord. But if you look at this world as a place in which it's all up to us to decide what happens, God rarely comes here. In other religious traditions, they do speak of God sending his son or God sending his prophet, but it is one time only, generally. But the Vedic literature gives you the full understanding of what's going on in the cosmos. The Lord is always coming. Out of care and compassion for the suffering souls in this world, the Lord is always manifesting a presence. He comes in so many different forms according to the particular problems in a particular situation. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, Deva Tiryan Niradishu. The Lord comes amongst the demigods. He comes amongst the animals. He comes amongst the human beings. He's always coming. Therefore, the Bhagavad explains that just like you can't count the waves in the ocean, similarly you cannot count all the incarnations, all the avatars of Godhead. So you can make this experiment. You can go somewhere where the ocean has waves. Outside of Mumbai, the ocean has waves? All right. You go there and try to count all the waves. Not possible. The waves are always coming, one after another. Similarly, Krishna and his avatars are always coming to this world, one after another. Once we begin to see the world in this way, then we stop thinking that human beings are the proprietors. This is the greatest mistake made by so-called intelligent people today. Whether in the sphere of economics or politics, everyone is acting like human beings are the proprietors. But when you study Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, you understand that Krishna, in one form or another, is always coming to this world, and he is ceaselessly trying to educate us. So why is it that we want to see a world in which God has very little to do with? The Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us just the opposite. Krishna is always coming. He's relieving the world of distress. And most importantly, Krishna is displaying to the world his all-attractive lila, his all-attractive pastimes. Therefore, it is necessary and it is a great pleasure for us to gather regularly to glorify Krishna, because Krishna is always coming. Naturally, you will feel appreciation for someone who's always coming to take care of you. But if you have some vague conception of God, that he has very little to do with this world, he put us into this world and left us, it'll be very difficult for you to feel any appreciation. Therefore, we must move beyond mere knowledge of piety, that there must be a God, and we should offer some praise to God, but mainly we have to make of our life what we can. That is not very satisfying, nor is it realistic. When we study Srimad Bhagavatam, we find out indeed, the Lord is always coming. Therefore, we feel gratitude. Everyone likes to feel gratitude. Everyone likes to feel appreciation. Once you understand that Krishna is always coming in one form or another, then inside you wells up appreciation and gratitude. You want to be grateful to Krishna, and Krishna wants to be grateful for your service. Bhakti yoga means two sides, the devotee and Krishna. Just as you are feeling appreciation for Krishna, similarly, Krishna feels appreciation for your service. So when the devotee and Krishna meet through bhakti, extraordinary things happen. Flavors, tastes are generated in the combination of the Lord and his devotee that can never arise in the material world. Material world means where there is no devotional service. When we are performing bhakti, we are not in the material world. Whenever Srila Prabhupada would travel around the world visiting various temples, he would always say, this is not Los Angeles, this is not New York, this is Vaikuntha, where there is the deity and the temple. You have the spiritual world. Naturally, it's very wonderful that you all have gathered in the spiritual world today to hear about Krishna. That means you have made a decision. This is the most important thing for your life. You could have stayed at home. You could be watching cricket on the television. I've heard that this is what's going on. Is India playing today? Yes? So you have all made an extreme sacrifice. By this sacrifice, you'll all go back to God. Eh? You have sacrificed the cricket match. But let me ask you, how does that cricket match solve your problems in life? How does it make your heart feel fulfilled? Maybe if India wins, then you feel some identification. Yes, we have won. But you were not on the playing field. You don't get any of the money. When you think about it, it's quite ridiculous. Our interest in these kind of things is because of habit. Naturally, we're interested in people playing. We're interested in sporting activities. Krishna knows that. Therefore, Krishna comes to this world and displays his leelas of sporting activities, romance, family love. All the things that we like, Krishna shows, I can give this to you in unlimited perfection. Therefore, it's much more intelligent to come and hear about Krishna than to stay at home and watch the cricket match. And then, if India loses, you know how you'll feel. You'll identify with the defeat. Oh, why did we lose? All this has nothing to do with the spirit soul. All of material existence has nothing to do with the spirit soul. When Krishna comes to this world, he shows you vital activities of transcendence that have everything to do with the meaning of life. So you will feel much more satisfied by your decision to hear about Krishna than to stay at home and watch the cricket match or anything else. Gathering together to hear about Krishna is the perfection of human life. And Krishna gives us so much to talk about. His leelas, his activities from infancy to youth occupy the minds and tongues of the greatest sages and the greatest devotees. Those same pastimes, those same leelas, can be our life and soul even today. Time has nothing to do with the value of Krishna leela. Although now we are living in the degraded time of Kali Yuga, in which it seems that spiritual development, bhakti yoga, has nothing much to do with practical life. This is a contemporary concoction. Because of the decline in God-conscious culture, because of the decline in Vedic culture, people have divorced practical activities of their day from devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas in a real culture, in a real human society, there's no separation between your daily activities and your devotion to the Supreme Lord. Real human culture arranges that all your activities are focused on developing love of God, love of Krishna. There's another thing that you can do when you go to the ocean. First, you can count the waves, realize it's impossible, and understand that similarly, you cannot count all the incarnations of Godhead. Secondly, Shukadeva Goswami, in the 12th canto, says you can go to the ocean and you can try to count all the waves, realizing it's impossible. Similarly, you will realize you cannot count all the faults in the age of Kali. So you can make this experiment in two ways. Next time you go to the ocean, try this. You'll never forget the experience. First, try to count the waves and realize I cannot count the incarnations of Godhead. Then again, try to count the waves and realize I cannot count all the faults in the age of Kali. In Bhagavatam, the age of Kali is described as dosha nidhi, an ocean of faults, in which there is only one good thing. So if you want to make an analysis, a search, a hunt, what is the only good thing in the age of Kali, the answer is very simple. And it's not the cricket match or the World Cup. The only one good thing in the age of Kali is that simply by chanting Hare Krishna, you can achieve the highest benediction, the highest perfection. Kirtanareva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Param Vijay. We have to understand what makes our knowledge of the science of God difficult. After all, Krishna is always coming, displaying his activities. Why doesn't everyone understand someone who's always coming? If you're always visiting me, certainly, gradually I'll understand you because you're always coming. Krishna is always coming. Why is it that very few understand him? He says in Bhagavad Gita, Manushanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatamapi siddhanam kaschid mam veti tatmata. Thousands of persons, yet hardly one is trying for perfection. Out of those very few who are trying for perfection, fewer still have achieved perfection. And of that tiny amount of persons who have achieved perfection, kashtin maam veti tatvataha, only one knows me in truth. So how is it that someone who always comes can be hard to understand? This is not Krishna's fault. It is our fault. Sinful activity prevents clear understanding of the Supreme Lord. On the one side, you have the barrier erected by our sinful activity. On the other side, the fact is that Krishna is beyond our senses. But even though he's beyond our senses, he's adokshaja, literally, he who makes your senses go down. Even though that is the case, still he provides the means by which you can understand him. But because there is sinful activity, the blockage is there. We cannot take advantage of Krishna's mercy. In Kali Yuga, the intelligent person is very alert to have a maximum lifestyle of Krishna conscious saturation. That protects you from sinful activity, and it also gives you the mercy of the Supreme Lord. These days, arranging, managing our lifestyle is most important. If you can understand how to arrange your lifestyle for filling it with maximum Krishna content, then you can live successfully even in the age of Kali. As many of you know, the Shastra explains, Srimad Bhagavatam explains, that amazingly, great saints and sages, they worship Kali Yuga. Can you imagine someone worshiping these degraded times? Yes, the sadhus, the pure devotees of the Lord, they worship Kali Yuga. Why? Because in Kali Yuga, although times are so degraded, you can attain perfection very easily simply by chanting Hare Krishna. So let us understand what is the actual value of the times we live in. And let us seek to manage our personal lifestyles for maximum saturation by Krishna Bhakti. Then we will be successful even in the age of Kali. And you're going to have to become more determined about this on an individual level. On an individual level, you're going to have to be more conscientious, because the waves of materialistic propaganda are increasing all the time. You can look at India now and see two things are going on simultaneously. Just like in this temple, this Chaupati temple, Radha Gopinath Mandir, you have seen how things are growing and growing and growing. More and more devotees, more and more activities. That's one thing. The other thing is that the material contamination is growing, growing, and growing due to so much degraded influence by the media, by television, movies, and so forth. So we have these two things, these two influences acting at the same time. Therefore, we have to be very clever about what influence we will take shelter of. And we must be expert in arranging our life to take shelter of the spiritual potency. Then we can be successful, even in this most degraded of ages. I travel around the world to every continent so I can see easily all the influences that will try to creep up in India in the coming years. These influences are already out of control in other places of the world. And so the next step is that these degraded influences of Kali Yuga enter into India. And you're seeing how in Mumbai things have changed so much in just a few years. I was shocked to notice how you have billboards advertising chicken lunches now in public. Yeah. Every year the cinema advertisements become more and more lewd and promiscuous. This is the result of what has already saturated the rest of the world. Now, basically, I can explain to you what goes on here in Mumbai as contrasted with the rest of the world. For the most part, you have a schizophrenia, that what you see in the cinema, what Bollywood gives you, or what you see on satellite television, is not the same as what goes on in everyone's home. You all know that. But don't get a false sense of security from this. The trend is always that what you see on the movie screen and on the cable or satellite television sooner or later becomes the same as what you experience at home. That has already happened in other parts of the world. That is the actual effect of media in the Kali Yuga. So right now you may have a false sense of security. Oh yes, those movies from Bollywood, they're very degraded. The billboards are very degraded. The music is degraded. But no one lives like that. Very few people live in that way. No, the time will come in India when people will live like that. I can tell you what goes on in the developed nations of the world. Advanced countries like Australia, New Zealand, where many people from India would do anything to get a visa to Australia, New Zealand. Anything. Let me tell you about life there. The parents have no idea how to raise their children because the parents of the parents today had no idea how to raise their children. So each generation gets worse and worse in behavior, although wealth is there, nice home, you know, nice job, nice education, all that is there, but each generation of children becomes more and more degraded because the parents have no idea how to raise children according to a standard. What is the normal thing that these parents will tell their children today? Do whatever makes you happy. That's the standard. Whatever makes you happy, you can do that. That's the only restriction. And what is the protection for the children? When they reach 12 years old, how are they protected? The parents hand them a mobile phone and say, when you're at a party at 4 a.m. in the morning, and there's some problem, remember, you have your mobile phone. Just give a call. That's the only protection they get. Everywhere in Australia, New Zealand, England also, it is quite normal that when the daughter is 13 or 14 and she wants to have a boyfriend, the parents say, bring him home, stay with him in the house. And the parents feel quite elevated in saying that. Our daughter will not be wandering around in the city with a strange man. He will be here in our home. We are very respectable people. This is the normal thing. Quite normal. They tell their daughters that. Don't be in a strange place with a young man. You're free to come home. He can spend the weekend in your room. We are a loving, caring family. We don't want you to feel strange or alienated. We want to meet him after the weekend is over. Yes, this is normal. This is not fringe behavior. This is accepted as a norm in society in England, Australia, New Zealand. Mm-hmm. Shocking. Mm-hmm. Once again, what you see in the movies sooner or later manifests in real life. I was speaking about this in Melbourne, Australia, and one person in the audience decided to correct me. I agree with you that everywhere it's like that. This is the practice, that the daughters bring the boy home and they spend the weekend. But my family was very strict. My father and mother were very strict with my sister. They would not allow the boy to stay in her room. They both had to spend the night together in the living room. Very strict family I have. I'm telling you the truth. In preaching in England, Australia, New Zealand, so often I come across cases in which, because divorce is so common, I've been explaining in classes in the morning how I know devotees, Krishna Bhaktas, who have teenage children going to high school. And in a class of 30 students in high school, only 3 of the students will be from a home where both parents are present. I know one devotee. He lives in a very prosperous city in New Zealand called Tauranga. And it's known as the wealthy city with very intellectual people. So in both cases, for his son and his daughter in their high school class, in the son's class, there are 25 students. Only 3 of those students have a home with a mother and father. In the daughter's high school class, there are 31 students. Only 3 students come from a home where there's a mother and father present. So this is the result of so-called civilization today. And because there are so many single mothers, I find again and again in preaching to young men that they tell me, that, let's say the young man is 18, 19, or 20. He has friends. He brings his school friend or his university friend home, and the mother takes the friend of her son. It's horrible, but it's common. It is considered almost normal now, that practice. These things are unthinkable in India. But 30 years ago, in these countries, it was unthinkable. Now what has happened? I know another example of one 18-year-old girl. She became a devotee of Krishna. And one day she came running to the temple and said, I have to stay here. I can't stay at home anymore. So the devotees asked her, well, what's going on? What is the problem? She said, well, my mother, she has a boyfriend, and then the boyfriend became interested in me, the daughter, and my mother got so angry at me, she threw me out of the house. Yes, this is Kali Yuga. This is the inevitable effect. Result of living without Krishna. Things just get worse and worse and worse. And what happens is, even though you wanted some feelings of security that things won't get so bad, things do get that bad. So, in these other countries outside of India, these things are normal now. I've also explained before how in England, which was supposed to be the home of Western culture, there are more children conceived outside of marriage in England now than inside. And the only reason why there are still more children born inside marriage than outside, even though more are conceived outside, is that there is abortion. So this is what Kali Yuga is about. Last time I was traveling around the world, I had one devotee with me. And he knows from his experience that what I'm saying is normal. You are all shocked, but he's from these kind of countries. He knows, yes, it's true. Maharaj knows what's going on. But he was always thinking, he told me, yes, my parents are divorced. They divorced when I was young, but that's the extent of the social problems of my life. It's not so bad, divorce, and my father's a scientist, and he always gave me money, and even though he was never at home to raise me, my mother raised me, and the family was split when I was young. It doesn't matter. But these other people, oh, they're so degraded. Oh. Yes, Maharaj knows what he's talking about. I've seen so many degraded things, but my situation's not so bad. So when we got back from our world tour, I went, he's a congregational member, so I drove to the temple, and he went home because he had to start working again. He had his own business, so therefore he could take off time to travel around the world to the temples. So first he had given up his flat in order to travel for 3 months, so he went to his sister's house to stay. She's about 30 years old. She has a family. And there was a wild party going on there. So he said, no, no, I can't stay there. I'll go stay with my mother. So he then went to his mother's house, who lived nearby. And his mother's about 60 years old. So he walked into the door of his mother's house. And there, he walked into the living room, and he saw his mother sitting there holding hands with a 32-year-old man. And he's just like, excuse me, mother, can you kindly explain what's going on? Those are the first words out of his mouth after coming back from his world tour. He was in shock. Can you kindly explain what is happening here? And his mother just looked at him calmly and said, oh, sure, this is my boyfriend. So he was so devastated, he immediately called me on my mobile and said, I know all the things you're saying are true, but I never expected to find it so bad in my own mother's house. So now I appreciate what Kali Yuga is about. So now you're thinking, well, if things are this bad, and if India is threatened by this kind of degradation, what is Krishna doing about it? Krishna is always coming and making efforts how to solve these kind of situations. In this age of Kali, he comes as Lord Chaitanya to make surrender to Krishna very easy. Krishna himself is very strict, but when he comes as Lord Chaitanya, he's very liberal. He distributes love of Krishna freely. We are experiencing the appearance of Krishna as his holy name. In Chaitanya Charitamrita it is stated, Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar. In the age of Kali, the avatar is the Nama Rupa, the form of the holy name. This is what will give everyone association with Lord Krishna. So Lord Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya to distribute the holy name, the Nama Rupa, freely to everyone. Those who take shelter of the holy name with great diligence and attention, they will be protected from all this immense degradation going on. Once again, I ask you, please consider. I'm living in a world in which Krishna is always coming. In so many incarnations, so many forms, he's coming amongst the demigods, for example, as Vamana Dev, the dwarf Brahmana. He's coming amongst the animals as Matsya, Hayagriva, Korma, Varaha. He's coming amongst the human beings as Ram, Krishna, Balaram. The wonder is how anyone could think that God is not here when he's here all the time in so many different ways. And we are approaching the celebration of the Lord's appearance as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the topmost bhakta. Krishna himself came to teach us how to be a bhakta. What more can you want from Krishna? I know hearing these things that I'm telling you about what goes on in the rest of the world, I know it's very shocking, but it is true. 30 years ago in these countries, England, Australia, New Zealand, such things would be shocking, but now it is normal. In fact, if you are shocked by these things in those countries, people will think you are abnormal. I know, for example, in talking to new devotees in these countries, sometimes I hear from the lady devotees, they tell me that, yes, of course, when I was 13, I lived with my boyfriend in the home, in the family home I lived. And so I say to them, well, don't you realize that this is quite degraded? But we had a serious relationship. They say, we had a serious relationship. So, in other words, it's considered to be so normal that even newcomers to Krishna consciousness have a hard time understanding that this is crazy, this is animal-like. Because they're coming from a society in which this is considered an everyday affair. And sometimes they look at me in the beginning of their devotional career. They look at me, Maharaj, why are you reacting that way? He was living with me at home. We weren't out in the street. We were at home. So this is what's going on in the world. I know some of you are dreaming, to go to the USA, to go to Australia, to get a computer job in these places. That will be the perfection. Send home some foreign exchange to the relatives. Ah, yes. When will that day be mine? Therefore, I'm telling you what you'll have to raise, what atmosphere you'll have to raise children in. Can you imagine trying to raise your children in the atmosphere that I've described? It'll be highly impossible for anyone except the strongest devotional child to withstand such a ocean of fault, ocean of degradation. I think I told you some years ago, so I'll repeat it again, because you probably don't remember, or there's many new people here. I was having to negotiate a fight or a feud between two Indian families in New Zealand. And both of them had no idea of any kind of Vedic culture or proper standard. They had both grown up in New Zealand and they just had Indian names and some mannerisms, but no understanding of what real culture is all about, and certainly no understanding of Krishna. So, what was the problem? One, the son of one family had made his girlfriend in the other family pregnant. So, the boy and girl wanted to marry, but there was a problem, and they called me in to mediate the dispute. The parents of the boy were objecting. You can't marry that girl because we are a Brahmin family and she's not from a Brahmin family. So they called me to mediate this very difficult dispute. So I said, look, let me explain a few basic facts of life. Brahmana boys do not impregnate unmarried girls. So the parents looked at me like I'm speaking some exotic, esoteric truth. Oh, we see, Swamiji. Oh. I said, being a Brahmin doesn't mean simply because of birth or you can trace back your family line to Gujarat and somebody somewhere in Gujarat was a Brahmana and therefore you think you're a Brahmana now. It doesn't work like that. This is what goes on. I'm telling you this because you may be thinking, oh, we will go overseas, life will be better, we'll get a good computer job overseas. No, this is what life overseas is like. And I'm also telling you this so you understand the pressures that are affecting life in India now. Now, you should think, how are we going to protect ourselves? How are we going to protect our families? There's only one thing you can do. Dedicate your family's life to the holy name of Krishna. We can see here in this congregation that those families who have made Krishna Bhakti their life and soul, they are completely protected from the degradation of the age of Kali. You can see brahmacharis, the future hope of the young men, trained to be heroes, withstanding the onslaughts, controlling their mind and senses, dedicating their whole life for the upliftment of others. You can see families, householders, where Krishna Nama, the holy name of the Lord, is at the center of their home. These persons are protected. The best thing that we can do in such troubled times is to take more shelter of Krishna, engineer our lifestyles so that we are filled with more Krishna content. We should not be hopeless. Krishna is always coming. Especially he's present in the age of Kali as his holy name. And Lord Chaitanya has distributed that holy name freely. The more we take shelter of the Hare Krishna mantra, the more our life will realize its full potential. Normally in Kali Yuga, no one reaches full potential. You notice, in Kali Yuga, people, if they attain any fame and glory at all, it's very short and quick. But when a devotee seriously chants Hare Krishna, the whole lifespan becomes auspicious. You can depend on that. So those are some things I wanted to share with you today. Are there any questions?
Maharaj, it's very shocking to hear all these things what you have said. But I would like to know that we devotees, being in the household life, husband and the wife, we have given our life into Krishna consciousness and we know that our aim and goal of life is to be just with the devotees and spend our life with them. And somehow or other, Krishna is giving us an inspiration that our life and soul will be only with the devotees. And we'll be able to carry our life this way. And as you said, that if you haven't taken a shelter of the holy name, we'll be able to be protected. But the fear is always there in our mind, is what about our children?
Yes.
Now the children, they don't have philosophical conviction about Krishna consciousness. Right now, they are on a sentimental platform. We are pulling them into Krishna consciousness and they are doing what we are telling them to do. But the real test will come when they will be completely exposed to the outside society, when they will go out and go for their job, when they go out for earning money, when they will go out for their further studies. At that time, it will be a very big test for them to how to contract those things, because at that time the degradation will be very high at that time. So at that time, what we should do to see to it that the children doesn't get affected and they don't come into that trap, because once they come into that trap, their life will be miserable.
First of all, the parents have to set a very good example so that the children will have it in their memory that our parents grew up, our parents raised us, in a certain way. They didn't simply say one thing and do another. They lived according to what they said. Child is 27, the child reverts back to the way the parents raised the child after perhaps a period of teenage rebellion. The second thing is that the parents have to be firm. In our house, this will be the behavior for our children. So, number one, the parents have to set an example. And number two, the parents have to be firm. I have one disciple, and when he was 15 years old, his mother allowed his girlfriend to move into his room with him. His mother felt she was being compassionate because the girl was from a fatherless home. Her father was in England and far away. And so the mother felt, oh, I'm being very magnanimous. I'm being very caring. Yes, you may live in our home. Yes, you may stay in the room with my son. In this way, everything will be very warm and friendly, and we won't hide anything. This will be a psychologically nurturing situation for my son and you, being together in the home without having to hide somewhere and carry on your romance. So later, that boy became a devotee when he was 17. Now he's initiated devotee. And his mother also became interested in Krishna consciousness. So, in preaching to the mother, I said, do you understand what you did to your son by allowing this? And so I had to spend an hour explaining how this was not the right thing to do. Also, the girlfriend of the boy, she became a devotee too. She's initiated devotee now. So, I had them both tell the mother, you shouldn't have done this. You shouldn't have let us stay together at such a young age. Let's speak of any age if you're unmarried, but I had to preach according to time and place, you know. You shouldn't have allowed this when they were so young. So now, the mother has understood, and she has another child, a girl, who's 14 now. And the girl, last week, demanded of the mother, I want to bring my boyfriend to spend the weekend with me. And the mother said, no. I made this mistake before. I'm not going to make it again. And the daughter began to protest. Why is it that for me the rules have changed? My brother was allowed to do this. Why have you changed the rules on me? The mother said, change it may be, but this is the way it's going to be. He cannot come and stay with you. So the mother learned the hard way, and now she's taking a firm stance. And she told the daughter that, just wait, go tell him he can't spend the weekend with you at my house and see how interested he is in you. So the daughter did that. Oh, I'm very sorry. Mother's taking a hard line. You can't spend the weekend with me at home. And then the girl never saw the guy again. And the mother said, just see, simply a tomcat hanging around the door. So one has to have courage to be a parent these days. Set a good example and have courage. Do your duty. The results are up to Krishna. Don't be upset if there's some little setback. Krishna promises that at some point in the child's life, the child of a devotee, at some point, that child will manifest some devotional service. Mm-hmm. I've heard Prabhupada say that if the parents follow Dharma and produce children, it is guaranteed that at some point in the child's life, that child will practice Krishna Bhakti. Sometimes you don't see it immediately, but it will happen at some point in their life. So sometimes you have to be patient. You do your best. That's all you can do. Anything else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it was a very wonderful class. I have two specific questions. One is, you preach to teachers at schools and universities where, and how is the reaction of these school teachers and university teachers or professors to this philosophy of ours? The second question is that the government officials who have a responsibility for social welfare, do they appreciate what you are saying, and do they understand themselves, or they are also like that and the whole thing is rotten?
Universities in the West, as I was explaining to Gauranga Prabhu, are the capitals of degradation right now. When I began at Yale University in 1968, it was an all-male school. There was some understanding at that time that in order for there to be proper application of the intellect, you can't have both sexes together. Then in 1969, they brought the women in. Then in 1969, they had separate facilities for the one dormitory, for example, for men, one, or you call them hostels, one hostel for the women. Then in 1970, they decided, what are we being so restrictive about? We should mix all the living arrangements together. So they put one floor men, one floor women. Then by the time I graduated in 1972, they decided, still we are being so restrictive. And they just mixed everybody randomly on all the floors and even had them using the same bathrooms. And that is the standard at most American universities now. Random. This room man, this room woman, all using the same bathroom. So, the teachers, the professors at these universities think, yes, this is very psychologically healthy. So, we are forced to defend even basic human behavior of sense control. The professors themselves don't want to control their senses. So, it's very difficult. Still, we're going on. There are some people who will listen, especially what university professors are finding interesting about Krishna consciousness is that we can answer all the mysteries of the day. We can talk about extraterrestrial life. We can talk about consciousness. We can talk about psychic powers. This is what they're interested in because these things are challenging the grip of modern science right now. The word is getting out that there's a lot of things in the universe that scientists can't properly explain. So the professors are very much interested in these things. And so we can speak on that. And then, finally, I make the point. The only way you can understand these mysterious things is if you have a purified consciousness. Then they start to listen. As long as your brain is filled with passion and ignorance, you cannot understand these subtle cosmic mysteries, what to speak of understanding Krishna. And I use something from quantum mechanics. I explain to them that knowledge about Krishna is state-specific. According to the state of your consciousness, that's what you understand. So in quantum mechanics, this is accepted, that the observer influences what he observes. So I say, if you can accept this in quantum mechanics, why can't you accept this in the macro world? What operates on the micro level, you accept that the observer and the observed are related. Why can't you accept this on the macro level? Then they begin to, sounds interesting. So I go about it in that way, because even appreciation of basic primitive morality is so missing in the Western universities. Now, Srinathji Prabhu has asked about the government leaders, those who are dealing with social welfare, social programs. What do they think? Are they recognizing the causes of social degradation? No. They have no knowledge whatsoever. They think that if there's a problem, throw money at it. This is the mentality in England, Australia, New Zealand. These are welfare states. In the USA, it's not a welfare country. They just think, if there's a problem, get a job, everything will be fixed. If you don't have a job, it means that you're a failure. If you get a job, then your life is automatically fine. In the welfare countries like England, Australia, New Zealand, all right, you may have a job, you may not. If you don't have a job, we'll give you welfare money, and then everything will be all right. In New Zealand, Australia, if you are a young man or woman, age 17, even at that age, you can go to the government and say, please give me money in my bank account every week because I don't have a job. Please support me. And the government will do that. Puts it right in your bank account. The equivalent of $100 a week in your bank account. And what do the young, what do these guys and girls do with the money? Drugs, parties. They spend it so much on drugs, they don't have enough to eat, but they don't care. So this is the government's answer. We give you welfare money, make it easily available. Isn't the problem fixed? So no, they have no understanding of how they are destroying society. It's a great tragedy. And in this context, we're trying to preach Krishna consciousness. It's a great struggle, but we are sure that this struggle has Lord Krishna's blessings. Right now, for example, in Australia, New Zealand, if you are, let's say, a single girl, normal single girl, you have to pay for your university. But if you are a single girl who's had a child out of wedlock, the government will pay for your university education. Now, what do you think many girls are thinking? It's cheaper to... This is society run by demons. This is a great catastrophe. Prabhupada pointed out that the only thing that can save society and civilization today is the Krishna consciousness movement. We're seeing that more and more. People have not the slightest idea how to even be a human being anymore. So this is the kind of pressure that's being pushed on India right now. So you all have a great responsibility to engineer your life for taking shelter of Krishna very deeply, to protect yourself, to protect your families, and to protect what is sanity in the world today. In young age, there are some hormonal changes that are taking place in the body of human beings and animals. So the attraction in male and females in this particular age has a scientific basis. How can we avoid this scientific reason? Please explain. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Dehino sminyata dehe komaram yovanam jara. The body is changing from infancy to boyhood, girlhood, adulthood to old age. What's new about that? You don't have to read a biology book to understand this. part of the changing body means hormonal changes. This is victimization by material nature. 1 minute, you are not paying attention to the opposite sex. The next minute, the body changes, the hormones change, and you're thinking of the opposite sex. This is not freedom, this is slavery. Now, the Vedic system gives us a whole approach how to cope with that victimization by nature. But that Vedic system has been destroyed these days. People think it's psychologically injurious. They think a life of unrestricted sense activity is advancement. Another thing I was telling Gauranga Prabhu, he was asking me about universities in the West because he's very much concerned with university preaching in Mumbai here and other parts of India. So he said, well, how is it? How are the students? I said, well, let me tell you, quite often I meet students who come to my seminars and workshops. They're ladies, and in order to pay for their university education, at night they're engaged in very degraded profession. But they are not looked down upon by society. They are considered that they're just doing the necessary to get their university degree. That is the important thing, to get the degree. They get the university degree, then they are fine persons. Never mind how they pay for it. This is the standard now. So, yes, there are hormonal changes in the body, but the Krishna conscious person can deal with all those changes of the body. Any change of the body, old age, death, the Krishna conscious person can deal with it. What to speak of dealing with hormonal changes at 12 years old. Krishna's program is for how to handle the changing body. And the most difficult change is death. But just like someone who has taken birth has a future, similarly someone who has died has a future. Anything else? When the holy name is the only means of deliverance in this age of Kali, then what is the significance of organized preaching and deity worship in the temples? We are following in the line of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada, who brought the contribution of organized preaching. Previous to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as we explained on his appearance day celebration a few days ago, previous to him, the normal system in India was village guru. A guru would be in a little village and he would have a few disciples, and the guru would rarely travel very far. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur realized that to make Lord Chaitanya's mercy available to everyone, why not adopt the contemporary or modern technology? And instead of using it for degraded purposes, as is common in Kali Yuga, use it to spread bhakti, knowledge of bhakti far and wide. So we are following in that line of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who saw that the printing press is another kind of mridanga. The kind of mridanga that you are familiar with can be heard for, you know, one city block or two. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur envisioned the printing press as a mridanga which could produce books which would spread Krishna Katha all over the world. So this is the line we are following in. And our Srila Prabhupada told us that even when he was a little child, he never thought small. He said, I was always making big plans for Krishna since he was a child. So this is our family inheritance. Some of you are business persons. You have your own businesses. You may hope to pass the business down to your children. So, similarly, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada have passed us down a family business. Think big. Just like this temple here. It started out many years ago in such a small way. Now look what is going on. The trustees of the temple, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, the devotees never thought, oh, we just keep it very small, we'll just be satisfied with our own bhajan. No, they're following Mahaprabhu. We want everyone to have a chance to hear about Krishna. We will adopt every method that is feasible and conducive for spreading Krishna consciousness. So this mentality is actually coming from Rupa Goswami 500 years ago. Yukta Vairagya. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yukta Vairagya Uchite. When something, even material, is used for Krishna's service, it is no longer material. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, at the beginning of the 20th century, took this Yukta Vairagya principle of Rupa Goswami and just expanded it to its full proportion. And our Srila Prabhupada inherited that family line of business and passed it down to us. Yes.
Maharaj, you're explaining about how Krishna consciousness is the only solution for all these problems that are facing Kali Yuga. Now, many young boys, they start coming to the temple, they like the process. But when they go back, especially in Bombay, the houses, they're not so big. You know, people don't have their own rooms. There's one small room where the whole family of six or seven stay. They have the television going on 24 hours a day. They have music. There's constant bombardment. And then they get little hope from here, but when they go back, they lose, you know, they get frustrated, and it's very tiring, and then they feel very disheartened, disillusioned. So that the bhakti becomes a big struggle for them in the initial stages. Devotional service becomes a very big struggle in the initial days for them. Mm-hmm. And they're not able to cope up, many of them. Some of them might fall away also. So what do we do? How do we preach, and how do such devotees get hope in those initial phases?
I can tell you what I do outside of India. I am not, except when I come here, I don't do so much preaching in India. But I can tell you what we have to do, or what I have to do outside of India to cope with this same problem. I don't know if it will have any practical application to what you do here, to the situation here, but I arrange that young men like that can live together and work or go to university, and in this way they can, while maintaining their material duties and affairs, they can at least associate with each other in an atmosphere where they can begin practicing Krishna consciousness and make some progress. Obviously such persons are not ready to be put into the brahmachari ashram. Nor are they ready, in many cases, to take up grihastha life. They're kind of in a, you know, special dimension. So I've created what I call the contemporary Vedic ashram. I take young men like that and I say, okay, you live together and you rise early, you chant your japa, there's no television, of course, and you go to your work, you go to the university, and then you come back in the evening, you have a program. In this way, it has actually been quite successful. Otherwise, I would be facing the same situation that you described. So maybe, you know, things here are different, but maybe something slightly like that might have some value. Maybe it's not feasible. But I couldn't find any other way to do than this. Because you cannot put such persons immediately into your temple program. They're not ready. It's premature. You don't know which way they're going to go. They don't know which way they're going to go. But if you give them atmosphere or an environment where they can try to find their feet in Krishna consciousness and have their heads clear up so that they're able to make a proper decision about how they can prosecute Krishna consciousness, then it may be a very good thing. Just like, is Nala Kuvara here? Are you here, Nala Kuvara? Where is he? Come, please, show yourself. He's in the other room there. Okay, he's an example. Okay, he's an example of the contemporary Vedic ashram. He had been struggling to be Krishna conscious for 4 years. I had been trying to get him established in Krishna consciousness for 4 years. So, he was working for a bank as a loan officer. And he kept telling me, Maharaj, I just want to quit my job. I just want to be a brahmachari. I said, no. First, let us see if you can practice Krishna consciousness while you're working your job. Oh, it's so difficult. It's so hellish. The karmis. Oh, I can't take it. You just try. Because if you get the confidence that you can practice bhakti yoga while you're working your bank job, then you'll always be able to remember that if you can't make it as a brahmachari, or if you decide not to be a brahmachari, you know that to some degree you'll have success practicing Krishna consciousness at home. So I want you to have that conviction rather than be a shooting star in Krishna consciousness. 1 minute, you know, trembling with ecstasy, Krishna, Krishna. The next minute, you know, back to sinful activity. I've seen this movie too many times. So he can tell you, every 6 months he would harass me. I want to quit. I can't take this job anymore. I hate the bank. The bank was always pushing him. You must get more loans, push the people, get as many loans as you can. And he was feeling, I can't go on. And he kept asking, I want to quit. I said, no, you cannot quit. So finally, he surrendered. And he figured out a way how to do his bank job and be Krishna conscious. Then after he surrendered, I said, okay, now you can be a brahmachari. And he feels good about that because he feels that I actually tried to cope with what it takes to be Krishna conscious in my situation without using brahmachari life as a false escape. So now he's in his last days of wearing white. When he gets to England, he will put on saffron. And so now he feels he had a well-planned, systematic approach to becoming Krishna conscious. So he lived for a year or so in this contemporary Vedic ashram with other devotees who were trying to find their feet and understand, well, do I want to be Krishna conscious? How do I want to be Krishna conscious? So he spent a year or so in that situation, and he was gradually accumulating his strength. He was reading every day, chanting every day. We have very strict householder devotees who run these ashrams, and they're making sure that they're Brahmana advisors. They're making sure the men are chanting in the morning, studying, properly executing their material duties. Generally, the problem we always find is that it's not that the men want to get too much into their material duties. They all want to renounce them immediately. I want to quit the university. I want to quit my job. I want to just be Krishna conscious. So I have to slow them down and let's find out what bhakti is about. Then we'll see, do you want to marry or are you better off married? Or is there some chance you can be a brahmachari? Let's see exactly what's going on. Just spend a year or two in the contemporary Vedic ashram. Then I can get a kind of vision of where you're at. You can get a vision of where yourself is at. And we can make a decision together. So he's an example of that. Hare Krishna Maharaj, it seems to be very difficult controlling the mind while chanting. The mind is constantly thinking. Prabhupada Presently, I am unmarried person. Please give me detailed process to control the mind in the status. To free from thinking. Oh, okay. They have explained to me that he's thinking of some lady. And he wants to know, give me a detailed process to control the mind, to keep the mind free from thinking of that lady. I have to remember which country I'm in before I answer these kind of questions. If I was in the West and I got this kind of question, I would know exactly the problem. I would just tell the guy, move her out of your apartment right now. I would say, you're serious about Krishna consciousness, you've got two choices. Move her out or marry her now. But we're not sure that we want to be together. Well, then why are you living with her? Well, you... Some years ago, I told you, you've probably forgotten, I have two disciples that they were... When she was 14... She met him and the mother, of course, very respectable family, actually still together, hadn't divorced. The mother's in the educational ministry, the father's in the educational ministry. So she was 14 and she was involved with boys. The mother said, will you please just pick one and bring him home and live with him? We are a fine family, we're a respectable family. Of all those boys you're dating, just pick one, bring him home, live with him. So... they did that, and then later they became devotees, 5 years later. And so when they became devotees, I said, well, you guys are living together, and in fact, you already have two children, maybe you should marry. So, and so they said, yes, Maharaj, that makes sense. So, they had no problem with that. Yes, we want to be Krishna conscious. We already have two children, age 4 and 6. Yes, we should marry. But then they told the mother, and she got a little upset, and she wanted to give very sacred, loving family advice to her daughter. She said, now, don't rush into everything. Just take it easy now. Are you sure he's the one for you? And the daughter said, mother, I already have two kids. I think it's already a done deal. I think, But the mother was thinking, she was sincerely feeling that she was caring for her daughter. Now, you don't have to rush into anything. Now, think about it. Is he the one for you? I mean, just because you've been living together for 6 years and you have two children, don't feel any pressure now. Don't let those Hare Krishnas pressure you to marry him. So this is life in the West now. This is the normal thing. I'm not telling you, abnormal incidents. This is a day in the life of preaching outside of India. So now I get this question here about, I'm trying to chant the holy name and the mind is always thinking of a lady and what to do. Give me the detailed process. so I appreciate the sincerity of the question, of course. I'm just trying to think how to answer it in the sociological context here. Perhaps I should say you go see the marriage board in the temple or something, or you talk to your counselor, or what do you say? Huh? You have a marriage board here, and you present your application, and yes, then they will decide. Okay? Now, of course, if you don't want to think of her, I can give you some special advice about that. That's more my specialty. Out of sight, out of mind. But you have to decide, whoever wrote the question, you have to decide what you want. I cannot make that decision for you. Of course, I don't mind speaking the benefits of the out of sight, out of mind program. But I am also aware that statistically, most young men will marry, and that is a reality. So fortunately, at this temple, they have a mechanism in place in which young men and women can peacefully go through this passage in life and while making progress in Krishna consciousness. Okay, I hope that was okay answer. In the morning class, you mentioned that pride restricts us from approaching Krishna. Then, by citing the example of Sanatana Goswami, you said the solution is to develop humility. However, Maharaj, we see that even as devotees, we have subtle desires for name, fame, and so forth. And even if we are externally humble, we feel proud of it. What is the cause of this disease condition, and how do we rectify it? The cause is karnam gunasangasa sarasa joni janmasu. By involvement with material nature, that means involvement with the modes of material nature, you pick up these things like pride. Many, many births this problem has been going on for. We have to understand analytically what the mind is all about. The material mind is always accompanied by lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, and illusion. Those things are always accompanying the mind materially. So don't be surprised. If the mind is material, things like pride, envy, lust, they will be there. Now, we don't want to get depressed about that. What we want to do is take up a therapeutic process for curing these bad associates of the mind. You'll find that in dealing with pride, if you always actively try to serve devotees, the disease of pride fades. If you always look for an opportunity to serve other devotees, then mystically and amazingly, your pride becomes reduced. Also, it's not that we want to get rid of all pride. All these emotions have a proper use. Pride, in its proper sense, means I am proud of being Krishna's servant. I am proud of being the disciple of my guru. I am proud of being a servitor. That much pride you can have. That's the effective use of pride. So let's think about that, how we can be proud that I have an opportunity to serve Krishna. Not that I'm a great servant, but I'm proud I have the opportunity to render some menial service to Krishna. I'm proud of the opportunity to be a disciple of my spiritual master. Not that I think I'm great, but I'm proud that even a wretch like me has the opportunity. That's the proper use of pride. All the emotions have proper use in the spiritual world. Krishna consciousness is not some artificial, psychologically damaging process of destroying your personality. No, bhakti is the perfection of your personality. That's why Nectar of Devotion is such an ingenious book, the summary study of Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Such an ingenious book, And Prabhupada told us, even if you don't understand it all, just read it again and again. Gradually, it will make sense to you because of your rendering of devotional service. Nectar devotion is all about emotions, how they are used perfectly for Krishna's pleasure. We're not Mayavadis trying to stamp out all individuality, all personality. No. We are Krishna's devotees. We want to use everything perfectly for Krishna's pleasure. Satyabhama in Dwarka is a very proud devotee. When Krishna starts talking about the gopis in Vrindavan, Satyabhama gets so proud and angry, she leaves the palace area and goes to her private room and won't come out. And Krishna has to command, bring that daughter of the foolish King Satyajit out here. And so Satyabhama very sheepishly comes out and hides behind a pillar in the palace. This is described in Sanatan Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And Krishna, she's hiding behind a pillar, but Krishna knows she's there by the sweet fragrance. Satyabhama, come out, reveal yourself. She's like that. She cannot tolerate. Whereas Rukmini, she's the epitome of no pride. She's so submissive that Krishna once decided, when will I ever get to see anger cross my Rukmini's face? Whatever I say, she agrees. She's so submissive. Satyabhama is quick to get angry, quick to be proud. But Rukmini is so cooperative and agreeable. So you know how Krishna in Dwarka devised a scheme to try and get Rukmini angry. He told her, our relationship is finished. You made a big mistake in marrying me. You should go get another husband. He told her, actually, you know, you remember, there were so many princes who wanted to marry you. I don't know why you married me instead of them. And it's a fact. Those princes were my enemies. So let me tell you the real reason why I married you. It was just to make those enemy princes feel bad. That's why I married you. Such shattering things. And then when this impact hit Rukmini Devi, she just collapsed on the floor. At that point, Krishna manifested his four hands. And with two hands, he picked her up. With the other two hands, he smoothed the hair from in front of her face. And he consoled her. Please, I was just joking. You understand, we're householders. A prime joy of household life when the husband comes back from work is to make jokes with the wife. That's all I was doing. So Rukmini, she's a study in no pride, just the humility, and Satyabhama is a study in pride, in pure devotion. She acts that way, Satyabhama, because it gives Krishna pleasure.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, how do you start preaching to college students or students, young students? How do you start preaching?
How do you start? For university students. The university students are always looking for good food at a cheap price. I know it's different here. And they're looking for a place to socialize, and they're looking for something new. So I tried to provide urban clubs where they can drop by and get tasty prasad and have a lounge-like atmosphere for developing camaraderie with very mellow devotees. And we give them yoga classes, all sorts of things, which they have to pay for because, you know, they're going to spend money on something. So if they want to come to Krishna consciousness in a gradual way, that's all right. They'll pay for the privilege. So this is what we do. And then also, myself, I try to write books which deal with the issues that I know contemporary university students are thinking about. I have just had one book, Searching for Vedic India, which presents Vedic knowledge as the cutting edge of inquiry in the 21st century. So, and simultaneously, this book is meant to dispel any illusions that Krishna is mythology, the Bhagavatam is mythology. It has a positive and a negative aim to attract them to Vedic knowledge, particularly Prabhupada's books, as a means for answering all the mysteries about psychic powers, extraterrestrials, UFOs, reincarnation. And then on the other hand, it's meant to prevent them from taking seriously what they've been taught at the university, that Krishna is mythology, the Vedas are all recent, so on and so forth. So that's personally what, in my little humble efforts, I try to do. Many people in India, even devotees, agree that yes, it is not a good life to settle abroad. But they feel that it's good if we can go out for 2 to 3 years, earn good money, and come back, instead of just struggling the whole life in India simply to survive. Please comment. Save all the money, and you will come back to India and live very simply. If all that is for sure, that means you have to be reasonably Krishna conscious already to execute such a plan. But if you're not, go out for 2 or 3 years, I'll earn good money, and then when I get back, I'll be serious about Krishna consciousness. This doesn't work. You'll be swept away quite easily overseas. So, bhakti requires good guidance. If you approach a good Krishna conscious counselor, the counselor can sort through this situation and see what determination you have, what is your practical individual situation. Myself, sometimes I'm approached by persons who say like that. In Australia and New Zealand, the big thing is, let me go to London, make big money, where the pound is so valuable. Bring the pounds back to Australia and New Zealand, and then I pay off all my university debt, and then I can become serious in Krishna consciousness. So, for years, I've been saying, no, no, no. First, take care of your spiritual life. Otherwise, if you go to London being spiritually weak, you'll just be blown away by the hectic city life there. Now, where you are, become Krishna conscious. So I've been saying that for years. Then, because Lord Chaitanya's movement is always expanding, recently I developed a new technique. Okay, if everybody wants to go to London to make good money, I'll open up a place in England. So now I say, oh yeah, you can go to London. Yes, you can go to England. Yeah, we'll have a center for you where you can drop by. We'll see you over there. In this way, in order to preach Krishna consciousness, you have to be, you know, flexible, you have to be strategic, always thinking how to stay one step ahead of Maya. Maya has her campaigns, we have our campaigns. It's like business competition. Maya has her business, we have our business, we're competing. The customers are going to the UK? Okay, we open a branch in the UK. What happened in the UK was that they noticed that we were bringing to Krishna consciousness more British people down under in New Zealand than they were in the UK. So they were wondering, well, Maharaj, what's going on? Please, you do these things in England, because in England there is a huge congregation of Indian devotees. Huge. But in terms of the British, it's not going on so productively. So we have to devise some techniques how to attract the Western people to Krishna consciousness. And not just ride on the laurels in the UK, for example, of having so many members of Indian descent and neglect the rest of the population. That was not Prabhupada's program. In fact, Mukunda Maharaj was telling me, he lives in New Zealand now, he's in semi-retirement, he's elderly, and he's writing. Prabhupada told him writing is his business, so now he's doing that. So he told me that when Prabhupada sent the first ISKCON devotees to England, Prabhupada told him, your business is to preach to the British. I'm sending you there to preach to the British. So he's very concerned that this is not happening now. And that, yes, it's wonderful that so many persons of Indian background are getting ample opportunity to become Krishna conscious in the UK, but as far as the British people, it's not happening. So this is how broad Srila Prabhupada's vision is, how to get everyone to take part in Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Never to be satisfied that, okay, our job is done. Just like I was mentioning yesterday how your Gauranga was telling me, what to do, Maharaj? We are successful in preaching in the universities, but the students who are becoming our members, they're from outside Mumbai. We have not yet cracked the youth of Mumbai. We have to do something. So this is what a devotee thinks like. More for Krishna, more for Krishna. A devotee is greedy for Krishna. This is the perfection of lobha. Look at these people, they're not becoming Krishna conscious. Krishna's service is lacking in this department. Let us do something. This is how the love of Krishna increases, by this greed. Everything is meant for Krishna. A devotee is always looking to see, what can I do more? Just like when Prabhupada returned to India after preaching in the West, he said that my Guru Maharaj told me to preach in the West. Now I'm going to start preaching in India because I fulfilled what he already told me. I want to do more for him. That's bhakti. Should I read this other side? What's our time situation? 5 minutes. Okay. In relation to morning class, something I said in the morning class, if someone has a very demanding profession and requires great expertise, then how should one divide time for his profession so that his expertise doesn't suffer, as well as he has time for spiritual progress? Say, for example, a doctor working at Bhaktivedanta Hospital. Because if he's not expert at his work, he will be relieved of his job. It is quite possible to chant Hare Krishna and to work your job. We have to get over this feeling of mental intimidation that it's going to be so hard that for me to practice bhakti and do my job at the same time. This is a mental concept which is dissipated very easily when you look at successful examples of persons who are doing this. And you have ample examples of that in this congregation. That makes Krishna consciousness much more accessible when you can see someone else is doing the thing you thought was impossible. Therefore, I urge you, if you're feeling like this, that my profession is very demanding, it requires great expertise, how do I divide my time so I don't lose the cutting edge in my field, at the same time I fulfill the spiritual program. This can be done. Simply, guidance is required. The last thing you should think is that it's impossible. There are so many examples here that will show you it is highly possible. As you become more Krishna conscious, you'll see that you have more time because you're not spacing out so much in the mind. Your mind becomes more focused because of attentive chanting. You can do more things in a fixed amount of time. So
Yes.
The amount of, there are 24 hours in the day, that is a fact. But the devotee can squeeze more into those 24 hours because the devotee's consciousness is not splayed out. Ekeha Kuru Nandana. The devotee is one-pointed. Not Bahu Shaka Hirantascha. Many-branched intelligence. It is the splayed out, many-branched intelligence that wastes time. So I thank you very much for your kind audience. It's always a pleasure to speak here. And I'm very happy that Lord Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, have provided such a wonderful place through His Holiness Saranath Maharaj and all the devotees here. This is a headquarters of bhakti, which is affecting the whole world. So please continue with these efforts, and I'm sure you'll be expanding more and more in terms of your effect on the lives of others, simply because of dedication to the holy name of Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glory to the Prabhupada.
So on behalf of all the devotees of Srila Radha Gopinath Mandir, we would like to express our heartfelt gratitude to His Holiness Devamrita Swami Maharaj, who has been here for the last 4 days. He gave 3 ecstatic youth programs. One was the Prerana Festival, which was covered by the Star TV, and the interview was taken, and most probably there will be a transmission in the first week of April. Also, there have been 2 newspaper reports about this festival and interviews with Devamrita Maharaj. Then on Friday, there was a program at VJTI and yesterday at IIT campus. He also gave 3 morning Bhagavatam classes, which were very, very inspiring and ecstatic. And today is the last day. Tomorrow he is going to Mayapur. So on behalf of all the devotees, I take this opportunity to thank Maharaj and invite him again in future for more such programs. So let us express our gratitude. Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol!